Today is July 27th, 2016, and this is episode number 370 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, even.
and you're Brian Chaffin?
Yeah.
Man with a thousand names.
Yes. That is my title. Coincidentally, that is my title. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@MacObserver.com.
Diction is hard, isn't it?
Well, apparently, you know, it's not like I've said my name that often.
That's a good point. And I'm glad I was here to help you through that.
Yes. Yes, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, and what a coincidence that I just guessed what your title is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Apple's earning reports.
I love your segues. They're the best segues ever.
Earnings report. No, I guess I said it correctly. I was laughing. Dude, what is wrong with me?
I don't know, but whatever you're having, I'd like a little bit of it.
Yeah, I feel like I should share. Pass to the left or something.
No kidding.
I think that's how that works. So, Apple's earnings report.
Right. So this all happened yesterday afternoon after the market closed.
Yep.
Third quarter. So we have $42.4 billion in revenue, $7.8 billion in earnings. And this is down what, year over year?
I believe. It is down year over year. I'm actually trying to find the numbers because it's not like I prepared.
Down year over year, $49.6 billion for the same quarter last year and $10.7 billion in earnings. So... yeah, so it's down.
Yeah, it is definitely down. iPhone sales were down, although they weren't quite as far down as they look. But the way Apple reports, they are technically down, I guess. So revenue's down, profits are down, iPhone sales are down, second quarter in a row. Now, Apple did hit its own guidance. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it was actually towards the high end of its own guidance, which is good. Mm-hmm. Apple hit the high end of its gross margin guidance, which is good because of the iPhone SE. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of concern that the iPhone SE could actually bring Apple's margins down appreciably. And more importantly, Apple beat Wall Street expectations. Wall Street was expecting, let's see here. Wall Street was expecting, why don't I have that? $1.38 earnings per share. Apple actually turned in $1.42. And Wall Street was expecting $42.1 billion in revenue, and Apple turned in $42.4 billion. So Apple beat that. And because of that, because Apple actually beat expectations, despite having year-over-year declines in all of the important things, mm-hmm. Apple stock actually rebounded. It was up after hours. Initially, it was up after hours like 5%, and it looks like it's up. It closed. Well, the markets closed, and... 8 minutes as we're recording this, and Apple stock is currently up 7%, $6.80 a share, back over $100.
Go Apple. All right, so I've seen people commenting on Twitter primarily. The comments are making are along the lines of, well, you know, when Apple does really well, their stock drops, and now they didn't do so well, and their stock shot up. That shows you how crazy the market is. But you... No, that's not the case.
It infuriates me. But at least people are being consistent. At least people are actually whining about it. This actually drives me nuts. Listen, Apple's stock value has nothing to do with what it just did and everything to do with what Wall Street expects it to do.
Right. So in this case, because Apple's numbers were down, but they outperformed what Wall Street expected.
Wall Street rewarded it with buys.
Right. And had Apple performed worse than Wall Street expected, then they would have been punished and the stock would have gone down.
If Apple had offered worse guidance for the next quarter than expected, Apple would have been punished. Plus, Apple has already been dinged for the year-over-year decline. That stuff gets built into a stock. Expectations get built into a stock before results for any company are announced.
And that's why when the numbers were announced yesterday, since they were off from what analysts were expecting, they had to adjust and the stock value went up.
Right. It's actually this. Wall Street is far from perfect, and most analysts don't get Apple any better today than they did back when, you know, before the iPhone was a thing, when no one could understand Apple's whole widget model, and no one still understands Apple's whole widget model, right? There's very few analysts grok Apple. Like, the, you know, we had years and years and years where Apple was the darling of Wall Street, but it was the darling of Wall Street for all the wrong reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that Wall Street is always right, but there is method and madness. Excuse me. There is a method to what seems like madness to Wall Street's valuations. When Apple performs out of Wall Street's expectations, the stock goes down or up. And, you know, for a long time, it would be, you know, Apple turns in a great quarter, but it offers guidance that was lower than what Wall Street was expecting, or Wall Street was expecting something more than what Apple did. Now, sometimes Wall Street will expect something outside of Apple's own guidance range. Doesn't make It's actually at this point, it's pretty foolish. Apple has been very consistent in nailing its own guidance, but It doesn't matter if Wall Street is wrong to do that, because the Apple's value is being bestowed by those same investors, and those investors are listening to the analysts. The investors are deciding what Apple is worth. There is no sort of like absolute vacuum where Apple is supposed to be worth a specific amount of money.
There's not an equation you just put Apple into or any other company and magically come up with their stock value.
Well, there's actually about a jillion different equations.
Right.
But there's no absolute equation. There's no right equation. There's only what people think is best. Some of those people are smarter than other people, and some of those people know more than other people, but there's still no absolute right. And Apple's price to earning, like, let's look at Apple's price to earnings ratio, or PE as it is often shortened to.
Okay.
It is low. It's 10.76. And if you look at a company like Amazon, where I will go and very apparently slowly.
This is exciting.
Amazon's PE is 302. That's just crazy. That's just absolutely crazy. But here's the deal. People, investors, and analysts do not see where Apple is going to grow. They do not have faith that Apple is going to announce a new product that's going to dramatically increase Apple's incredible earnings and revenues.
Right. So with the crazy PE that Amazon has, it says that investors really believe that Amazon has a solid path for growth.
Yes. Yes. Rightly or wrongly, Wall Street believes that Amazon's profits at the very least can grow. But really, they probably think that revenues and profits will grow. And revenues probably will, but that's another point. Profits, I don't really think Amazon's ever going to be all that profitable. But that's not the point. The point is the belief in the future. And rightly or wrongly, Wall Street does not believe that Apple is going to grow tremendously in the future. Although, you know, 10X is still 10X. And rightly or wrongly, Wall Street believes that Amazon will grow. Again, I'm not saying that Amazon is that Wall Street is always right. I'm just saying that there is a method to the madness. These things don't exist in a vacuum. People aren't plotting against Apple. You know, people are not. You can have there are people like Doug Kass who have fomented Apple's stock in what I consider to be a very, very, very illegal way. But apparently the SEC doesn't agree. So, you know.
So apparently more power to him.
Yeah, apparently. You can get some individual stock manipulation for any given company, but no one can collude to keep a company as large as Apple manipulated over the long term.
Okay. That makes sense, because you'd need to have so much control over the company to manipulate the stock in that way. It would be apparent that someone was doing that.
Well, you'd have to have so much money that you could actually control the stock. You'd have to have everybody agreeing. You'd have to have all the big players, all the hedge funds, all of the the wealthy investors, all the institutional investors, all of the money markets, money. What do you call them?
I kind of like money markets and money funds and hedge investors.
It's the word where you buy into a fund that buys and sells a large quantity of stocks.
Oh, right.
Diversifies for you. What do you call those? It's ridiculous.
That's kind of funny, because now I can't think of it either. I'm blaming you for me not being able to remember.
Okay, write us and tell us. I mean, hopefully we will have remembered it by then, but go ahead and write it and mock us. Mock us for not being
Brian.
Able to remember this.
Go ahead and mock Brian when you write in. That was my out loud voice again, wasn't it?
That's okay. Fine, mock me. Anyway, you'd have to have all of these people agreeing to keep Apple stock artificially depressed for reasons, right? But here's what would happen. Even if you could get everybody to agree to it, somebody is going to turn around and go, well, I know that this is happening, so I'm going to buy this stock because it's cheap.
And then you've just kind of defeated the whole purpose.
Yeah, you can. You know, what is it? Like two people can keep a secret if one of them is dead? Is that the old phrase?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's no big conspiracy against Apple, and Apple, the company that is worth more than any other company on the planet, I might add.
Right.
So it's just, anyway, so and the stuff drives me nuts when I see it, and I see it a lot because Apple fans, they love Apple, and they want the rest of the world to perceive Apple the same way they do.
Sure.
And I get it. I understand where it comes from, but it's just not how this stuff works. So, yeah, Apple stock.
All right.
The markets are now closed, and the stock officially looks like it gave a few cents in the closing minutes. So it officially closed 6.58% higher today.
All right. Well, go Apple.
Yeah, go Apple.
And good news, investors, your stock is worth more than it was yesterday.
Yeah, and I have like just the tiniest stake imaginable in Apple, and I'm saying that for full disclosure sake.
I think you like to brag about the fact that you have an Apple stock certificate.
I do actually.
Because they look cool.
I have a printed Apple stock certificate from One Share. They frame it, and it was back when those stock. I got, my mom got it for me, and back when Apple's stock was cheap, and it has the six colored logo on it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, that is like really cool.
So, in the meanwhile, a friend of mine was watching my Twitter feed, and he's like, "Dude, when did you become so jaded?" because I was complaining throughout a lot of Apple's conference call with analysts.
You know, it probably says a lot about each of us, the things that we keyed in on in the conference call.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were tossing out your apparently jaded comments, and I decided to invent a drinking game where every time Tim Cook says Pokemon, you take a drink.
Pokemon. That was driving me nuts, actually. Pokemon. Stop saying Pokemon. It's Pokemon.
Pokemon. You have to catch every one of them.
Pokemon. Anyway, the first thing that got me cranky was Tim Cook was in salesman mode again. His tone of voice was, and I noticed this last time around, the last when Apple reported its first year-over-year decline in 13 years, and Tim was just upbeat and super, and look at all these great things. And I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, Tim's job in part is to represent the company well.
Sure.
He has a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders to increase value. That's actually how the law of the land is when it comes to public companies. I don't resent anything. It's just weird to me. He was in salesman mode again this time around. He's just like, you know, super upbeat, and I've got all this great news, and it stands in sharp contrast to his tone of voice and presentation and delivery from, you know, all the quarterly conference calls when Apple was going up and up and up and up. And it also stood in sharp contrast to his tone of voice when he was answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice that when he started answering questions, he lost that salesman pitch? He lost that good times vibe.
Yeah, it was a marked difference in the tone of his voice. The first part of the earnings report conference call, it felt like I was listening to the WWDC keynote.
Well, it's because he spent, I didn't time it, but I thought it was like 6 minutes, but it was somewhere definitely between 3 and 6 minutes.
It was a significant amount of time for the event.
Yeah, where he was recapping the stuff that was announced back at WWDC. And, you know, it doesn't seem like a quarterly conference call with analysts, all of whom paid very close attention to what was announced at WWDC, right? Every analyst involved in that call was watching the WWDC keynote like, you know, like a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like getting into the details of what was announced is necessary unless you think that you need to distract everybody from your actual earnings.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It felt to me like what Tim was trying to do was say, yeah, you know, the numbers might be down, but look at all the really great stuff that's coming. Don't worry, the numbers are going to be fine. Look at all the really great stuff. Ooh, squirrel.
Yeah, it did. That's what it felt like. And that's what it felt like last quarter, too. And the thing is that Apple turned in, relative to its own guidance, Apple turned in a great quarter. See, he didn't need to be in salesman mode.
Yeah, this is new territory for Apple, at least relatively new territory, because it's been a long time since they've had a down quarter. And my guess is that they're just really not sure how to address the news.
Well, you know, and that plus, so my friend who was accusing me of being jaded, it's funny because he's actually usually the jaded one, and I'm the Apple fan, and he is not the Apple fan, and so, you know, we kind of had like this major role reversal going on in this conversation, and he said, well, you know, maybe Tim's just gotten better at doing this. In other words, that it's not that he was putting on a salesman voice, but that he's just gotten better at presenting these things. And to his point, Tim Cook's keynote presentations have gotten way better. He's really good at keynotes now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just looks and feels so much more natural on stage than he did when he first started doing it in the wake of Steve Jobs passing.
Yes. And well, yeah, that was a new thing for him. And also he was having to do that in the shadow of Steve Jobs. And that, I'm assuming, even for someone like Tim Cook, would weigh heavy on you.
Well, he is, as he's told us on many occasions, he's an intensely private person, right? He's not an extrovert.
Right. So getting on stage in front of hundreds or thousands of people and knowing that the cameras are broadcasting you to millions more, that's a very markedly not private thing.
Right, right. And he's gotten better at it. I don't know if he's taken lessons. I don't know if he's gotten coaching. Don't know, you know, I have no idea how hard he's worked at it. I'm guessing he's worked hard at it. And he has, in fact, gotten better. But I don't think that having gotten better at presentations is what's going on with Salesman Voice. You know, I think my guess, and we all know how close I am to Tim Cook.
Oh, right. Yeah. When you two were at the barbecue last week playing Pokemon together. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. My guess is that we just have the, you know, we're actually seeing that Tim Cook is actually human and that he, in the face of having to deliver news that is in contrast to the kind of news he delivered for many, many years, that he naturally feels like he needs to present it in a more positive fashion. And then we're just seeing, you know, human nature at work. That's what I guess it is. It's just, I don't know. I am confident that Apple has a plan. I am confident that Tim Cook has a plan. I'm very confident in Apple's future, and I don't feel like he needs to go into salesman mode. Whether or not Apple has a down quarter year over year, that's the thing, is that I am so comfortable with Tim Cook's leadership that it frustrates me that he feels like he needs to go into salesman mode when I don't think he needs to. And it turns out he didn't ask him.
Which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's weird too, right?
It really is.
I mean, after we found that Pokemon together?
I know. Well, he was probably thinking, oh, Brian's trying to catch the pick at you, so I better leave him alone until he gets the Pokemon. And then the next thing you know, someone's saying, Tim, here's a fresh lemonade. And he's like, gosh, thanks. And it was gone from his mind.
Yeah, and we say all that with love, Tim.
Absolutely. And honestly, Tim, thank you. Thank you for the new drinking game.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for the new drinking game. So anyway, that was my sort of, those were my two bits of negativity. One was Tim's salesman voice frustrated me. And two was I really wanted to see Apple fans complaining about Apple stock going up when Apple had a down quarter. And it turns out they did. So they were consistent. If people had just taken it for granted that Apple stock went up, that would have annoyed me more, because yeah, I am a high maintenance princess.
But you're our high maintenance princess, and we love you.
I am a high maintenance princess.
All right, so you've tossed out a couple things that bugged you about the conference call. Is there anything that stood out that you really liked?
Well, you know, it was mostly a snoozer. Did you think it was mostly a snoozer?
Yeah. So I'm typically sitting there, like, leaning in to my speakers to make sure that I'm not missing anything, so that as soon as they say the thing where my first thought is, wow, I need to get an article going right now, I can just jump into it. And I was sitting back in my chair this time. And while that seems like a subtle thing, that's actually really significant for me.
Say it again.
All right. So I'm usually leaning forward. Yes. So I'm closer to my speakers through the entire earnings report so that I don't miss the key thing that I want to start writing about. And partway through this conference call, I sat back and just kind of leaned back in my chair and listened.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it was kind of a snoozer.
It was. And, yeah.
But the stuff on AR I thought was interesting. Augmented reality.
What'd you like about that?
Well, for one thing, that's when Tim brought out the Pokemon.
That's right. That's right. Tim thinks that the Pokemon, that's all about the AR. That's some good stuff right there.
He mentioned AI, artificial intelligence. He actually did a long spiel on AI towards the beginning during his opening remarks.
And that came up again a couple times during the Q&A section, too.
Yes, it did. And I did enjoy, even though it was part of that recap that really you probably didn't need to make. I still enjoyed this section on AI, but the stuff on AR was a little more telling because I think we got a little cook code, and we haven't had any cook code in a while, have we?
I don't think so. So fill me in. What was the cook code?
I don't know. Should I give some quotes? I made the transcript of.
Yeah, if you have some good quotes, let's go for it. And while you look those up, I just want to point out that. That Tim likes the Pokemon.
He said, quote, in terms of AR and the Pokemon phenomenon.
Tim, I love you, man.
It's incredible what has happened there. I think it's a testament to what happens with innovative apps and the whole ecosystem and the power of a developer being able to press a button, so to speak, and offer their product around the world. Now, part of that, end quote, part of that is just, sort of patting the app store on the back.
Yes.
Right. You know, and making sure that the analysts understand that importance. So that's fine. I'm actually skipping a bit. Quote, it also does show, as you point out, that AR can be really great. We have been and continue to invest a lot in this. We are high on AR in the long run. We think they're great things for customers and a great commercial opportunity. So we're investing. And the number one thing is to make sure our products work well with third-party things like Pokemon, unquote. Gene Munster of Apple Television fame then said, would you say there's going to be a computing shift to AR longer term?
And what did Tim say?
He said, quote, you know, I notice people that want to call it a new computer platform, this AR in general. We'll see. There's a tendency in this industry to call everything new the next computer platform. That said, I think AR could be huge. We'll see whether it's the next platform, but regardless, it will be huge. Now, end quote. When Tim Cook starts talking about something where he's saying that we've invested here and continue to invest here. And then he also says it will be huge. You can bet your bottom dollar that means that Apple has some kind of product or service relating to, in this case, augmented reality in the works.
Yes. And, now, I'm finding this very interesting because all of my AR experiences that I've had to date leading up to Pokemon, I'm just going to say it that way for the whole rest of the show.
That's what we do.
It's what we do. Anyhow, leading up to the game have been very disappointing. But the whole Pokemon thing, that's been different for me. And all of a sudden AR became this very compelling thing. The other AR experience I've had that I really enjoyed was the ViewMaster. But they're calling that is it ViewMaster VR or ViewMaster AR? I can't remember. But that's VR. The whole thing where you have to hold up the ViewMaster to your face and it becomes more immersive as opposed to the Pokemon thing where you go outside and it becomes a true AR experience. So with that in mind, I'm really interested to see what Apple has planned for the AR front, because it feels like AR is still very rudimentary.
And oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Totally. Totally. We're in early days of AR and VR. I mean, you know, we're in like prehistoric times on both of these concepts / technologies.
Yeah, I feel like this is the equivalent of the late 80s with wireframe computer graphics, and we were all blown away by that.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, we know, according to the Wall Street Journal, that Apple has a secret AR team.
So, not quite so secret.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be secret. But the Wall Street Journal found out, may have been a controlled leak. It's hard to tell. And we know, by the way, should we explain what AR actually is?
You know, we should.
All right. Yeah, why don't you do it?
Okay, so AR, augmented reality, it's a way of overlaying other information on top of what you're actually seeing. That's a very simplified version. So that could be along the lines of like what Google was pushing with Google Glass, where you're looking at your environment and then other information appears in front of your eyes to go along with that. So in the case of Google Glass, it was things like a little message that would pop up and say, turn left up here to get to the coffee shop. And in the case of Pokemon Go, it's letting you look through the camera on your iPhone and see what's actually in front of you, and then having a Pokemon character overlaid on that, so it appears as if there's this magical little animal in front of you to catch.
Although, to me, most of the screenshots that I've seen, and maybe it's better when you're actually moving your iPhone, but it very much looks like the Pokemon character has been overlaid on top of the image and not inserted into the image.
Yes, if you're in an area where there's a lot to actually see, like there's people walking around and there might be like planters and benches like in a park, and you are not far enough away from those things, it will look like someone just slapped a cartoon character on top of a video. But if there's some room around the area where so if there's room around where you're viewing, then the character will look as if it's actually standing on the sidewalk in front of you or in the grass in front of you.
But AR is a lot more than just, you know, this sort of gaming application. AR would include adding arrows pointing to restaurants.
Right, like the Google Glass thing.
Like, yes, Google Glass was very much AR.
Yeah, a heads-up display, like you have in fighter jets and like you're seeing in some cars, that's AR.
Well, you can do the same thing, though, with just an iPhone. You can,
sure,
you know, you take your iPhone with the camera on and you're looking down a street and, you know, the same sort of information can be overlaid on top of it. That's
AR.
Yeah, or, you know, like directions. A heads up display in a car, you know, those that have heads up displays that project onto the windshield.
That's so amazing that I wish I would have said that a minute ago.
I beat you to it.
No, I'm just being a butt because I did say it.
Oh, good. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Where was I?
I'm not sure, but I was talking about heads up displays and jet fighters and cars and the arrows and signs and Google Glass, and that's okay. You're our princess. It's okay.
High maintenance. So yeah. Anyway, yeah. There's all AR is a lot more than Pokemon.
Yes,
and
it is.
It's and you know, the inevitable Pokemon clones that come out and fail. You know, AR is a lot more than just that. There is all kinds of useful information that can be inserted into what we're seeing, and this is what was driving Google with Google Glass. Mm-hmm. I might add. I mean, this is Google was driven by two things. One, they want to be able to catalog everything that you look at because their business model is truly evil. And secondly, they also wanted the ability to be able to see information that can be projected onto what they're looking at. Right. You know, they were driven by both the desire to know more about us as well as the desire to actually be able to put that information to use for themselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
As users, I mean.
Right. Right. Yeah. Google Glass was a great proof of concept, I think. And now we see how the technology, or we will soon see how the technology gets put to use in a way that is more beneficial to the average person. And I'm wondering if this is part of Apple's plan for Project Titan, the car.
Well, we can assume. I think it's an easy assumption that Apple's going to be doing cool stuff with a heads-up display in Apple Car. I think that's an easy assumption.
Yep.
But I don't think that their investment is solely car related. I think that they're doing something else there too. Probably some kind of standalone product.
I'm thinking that you're right. There's more than just Apple Car in the future for Apple's AR plans.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I just don't know what it is. I mean, Tim has said very specifically that he doesn't think that the face is a good place for wearable computing.
And I agree. It's interesting how people that don't wear glasses jumped into the, hey, let's design glasses for people to wear thing. And those of us that have to wear them all the time, at least me, and so of course I can project onto everyone because I can. My first thought was, why in the world would I want to do that? I already have to wear glasses. Why do I want to make them bulkier and heavier?
Yeah, they weren't that much heavier, man.
Did you ever hold a pair?
No.
They were that much heavier. If you're just holding them in your hand with nothing to compare to, you'd be like, yeah, these don't weigh very much. But if you put them on, I mean, you immediately know you're wearing glasses that are much heavier than what you're used to wearing. Now, for someone that doesn't wear glasses, they probably wouldn't notice at first because they have no basis for comparison. Mm-hmm. But if they're wearing them for any length of time, their ears are going to start hurting.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough. I trust you. Didn't look heavier. I just sort of leapt to a conclusion.
Well, I can understand why you would. I mean, we have all this science and technology, and in many ways, it just feels like it should be uber light.
And that, yeah, not uber light, but uber light.
Yes.
Uber light, I guess, would be a bicycle sharing service.
Or a flashlight sharing service.
So.
Anyhow. How about that Pokemon?
Well, So Tim's stuff with his comments on AR. You know, the cook code is when he starts telling us what he's going to be doing without telling us what he's going to be doing, and people seem to miss it a lot. And to me, this was very, very strong cook code that Apple has absolutely got something something coming in the AR space, and that Tim believes that it's going to be something that is a big deal.
Well, Apple doesn't like to step into markets where they can't make a big change to whatever that market is. So, yeah, so if Apple doesn't have anything new and significant to bring to the space, they're not going to do it. If they're really interested in AR, and based on Tim's comments, they are, they're very serious about this, Apple has something very significant for the AR space planned.
Well, if I remember correctly, the Wall Street Journal said that it was something like a 600-person team, and we know that they bought an AR-related company, Mayato.
Yeah, they have more than one company that that ties into AR, but yeah, there's the one that was very specifically AR. And is it Mayato, the one? And is that the same company that was doing facial tracking and stuff?
Yeah, that's right. They were doing that company, too. They hired a couple of key researchers in this space as well, key engineers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they have a lot of motion tracking people, too.
Yep. And you know, this all could just be car stuff. It truly could be, but I suspect there's more to it than that.
I think you're right. I think there's something more to it. And when Apple shows us what it is that they're working on, we will be amazed and at the same time think, well, of course, this makes sense. But until we see it, we won't be able to conceive of what it is.
Well, yeah.
Or at least until we start getting the leaks. Because Apple seems to be very leaky anymore.
Apple does seem to be very leaky anymore, unless it's software.
Yeah, that's true.
Or unless it's being built in Apple's own factory, i.e. the Mac Pro.
Right. And to be fair for the Mac Pro, there's really not much to say right now. So there won't be any leaks there.
But yeah, don't need to go off on another epic rant there.
No. All right, so did we hit the high points for you? I lost track.
Yeah, there was stuff with the Apple TV as well.
Yeah. Okay.
John ended up writing about that. Did you?
We didn't talk about that this morning. But
you talked about Apple TV this morning?
No, we didn't.
You didn't talk about this morning.
So you're right. There was the Apple TV stuff that was.
So yeah. So Tim said, "Quote: The introduction of Apple TV and tvOS last October, and the subsequent OS releases. What's coming out this fall? Think of that as sort of building the foundation for what we believe to be a broader business over time. I don't want to be more precise than that, but you shouldn't look at this. This was the big sentence for me." But you shouldn't look at what's there today and think, we've done what we want to do. We've built a foundation that we can do something bigger off of. And, you know, ignoring the prepositions there at the end of the sentence, mostly pedantic. But, I've assumed, but I kind of lost heart. I thought, you know, sometimes I start thinking that Apple's giving up. It's Apple TV dreams. And this says to me that there's still something more to come with Apple TV.
I agree. There's something more to come with Apple TV. And it's, I think part of what is going to play into that is their services business, which is growing. It's actually the only segment in Apple that showed growth this quarter.
Significant
growth. Yep. We had the news come out yesterday that Apple struck a deal with CBS. So the new carpool karaoke show, or I can't say the word correctly.
You just did. It's karaoke.
That's how we say it in the United States. But it's, from what I understand, that's not the anyhow. So it's a show that's based on a segment from the Late Late Show with James Corden.
Yep.
And it's going to be streaming through Apple Music.
Yeah, by the way, I'm a little Apple Music is going to be the exclusive source for music, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they announced?
It's the exclusive source for music, and it's where the show's going to be streaming.
Oh, right. The show's going to be streaming. Okay. But it's going to be on TV, too.
I'm assuming it'll be on TV as well.
Yeah. I'm not overly excited about this, because I feel like the carpool karaoke thing is fantastic when it's like a weekly short segment on a late night talk show. I'm a little less sanguine about it being a 30-minute show on five nights a week.
I think that you are keying in on the wrong part of this announcement.
Please enlighten me.
Okay, so the part of this announcement that matters, because I agree with you, this is a TV series. I don't think it's going to do that well. But what matters out of this is that Apple is swinging these exclusive content deals.
Well, that's what matters for Apple. That's true. I was actually thinking of it from the TV show standpoint.
Yeah, and yeah. So, but yeah, the important thing here, the significant thing, is that Apple's in a position where they actually are swinging some exclusive deals, and they are going to continue doing that. And I think that's the bigger thing here. It's that Apple, instead of like coming up with their own network or creating their own studio, they're raising the interest in their services and products by making the other deals to get the content. So they didn't have to become Netflix.
So far, but again, you know, we're still in the transition process.
Right. And,
we're still in a development stage really for Apple TV. This has been like the most public hobby development effort in, you know, certainly from Apple ever. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's been this great big thing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And everything that we've seen with Apple TV so far shows that, to me, what Apple is doing is playing a very long game in the entertainment industry. And Apple TV has gone from being this little box that they call a hobby to being something that they're selling as an entertainment appliance. And now we have Apple Music, and we have these other content deals that are starting to come together. And I think Apple is going to continue to slowly build up all of this content and these other features. And we're not going to get this huge look at what Apple TV is now thing. But as we look at it over time, we'll be able to look back and say, wow, this is significantly different from what we had before. And it'll be a much bigger thing, whatever it is.
That's a really interesting perspective. And I will confess that until this moment, I have been focused on the idea that Apple would be announcing something specific, you know, some sort of key service that would be this transition point of the future.
No, I think it's going to come in little bits and pieces.
That's an interesting thought.
Well, when we come back to this conversation in 3 years, 5 years, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see where Apple is with this and to see if I'm right.
Fair enough.
And when I say that, what I mean is it'll be interesting to come back and have this discussion so you can say, wow, Jeff, you were right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're onto something. I totally think you're onto something. I think I've been looking at it wrong.
Well, it's not very often where we have a show where we toss something out and it fundamentally shifts how one of us is looking at something Apple is doing.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. We definitely live in interesting times.
Boy, howdy.
Right. So, we had a third topic and second topic.
Yeah. You wanted to talk about 3D printing fingers, didn't you?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Well,
we talked a little bit during TDO.
Right. Okay, so we should probably explain why we're talking about 3D printing fingers. And the deal is, as I recall, the FBI is working with some scientists.
Yep, researchers at a university. I forget the university. It's a particular professor with some graduate students.
Okay, and so what they're doing is working on creating a system where they can take the finger fingers from someone. And in this case, they want to do this with someone who has died. And then through 3D printing, reproduce the finger complete with finger print ridges. So it's a duplicate of the person's finger.
Well, yeah, specifically, they want to be able to take just fingerprints.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And do this.
Yes. And then, yeah. And so then once they've got that fingerprint, then they can use that to unlock a smartphone that's using Touch ID, or if it's an Android phone, it would be the Android equivalent, whatever name a specific user.
Yeah, there's no Android equivalent of Touch ID, but, you know.
Yeah, but that's just a big. But there are fingerprint unlock systems on Android devices.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they're working to make this happen. I find this to be fascinating because the technology to make this work, I mean, we're talking something that's pretty sophisticated. But if they get it, wow, that's just amazing. The big issue that I see is that once they get it sorted out, and I'm sure they eventually will, they have to figure out how to make this happen in a very fast time frame. Because if they want to use it on an iPhone, you have 48 hours from the last time you did an unlock of the device before you have to put a passcode in again, making the fingerprint useless.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's actually the thing is... I mean, the professor and the students had already taken some time to do this, and they weren't intending to deliver the fingers for another several weeks, the printed fingers. So, I mean, it's not going to work on the specific case this is all being done on, at least not if it's an iPhone.
Right. If it's an Android phone, depending on the model, sure.
Yeah, it could work.
Yeah.
It could work. So it's it's interesting. But where I think it gets more interesting is, and you know, what I said in my piece and what I said when we talked about it on TDO is that this is just the beginning. You have to start somewhere.
Right.
And the FBI has effectively been publicly stymied from getting the help of companies like Apple and probably Google or anyone else in developing backdoors. I mean, you know, right. they did such a poor job of managing the San Bernardino killer's work iPhone that's probably not going to happen at this point. You know, being able to like force Apple to develop a backdoor for
the Department of Justice did an excellent job of sabotaging their own efforts.
Yeah, and the FBI too. And
well, FBI is part of the DOJ, so I was making a blanket statement. But yes, FBI specifically. Yeah. Anyhow, now I'm being mostly pedantic.
You are, but in a law enforcement nerd kind of way.
Yeah. Well, you know. Anyhow, Pokemon.
Yeah, Pokemon. So, if the method does work, let's say that they 3D print the fingers of a live person, say that of the professor or say an FBI volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If they're able to do that, which one would assume that they would be able to do if they so chose.
Sure.
And, you know, and treated this as a proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
They could get faster at this and they could get so fast at this that it's conceivable that, you know, if everything sort of like just like if Apple or anyone else didn't make any changes to account for this, I specifically see the day where this that would become cheap enough to print fingers as a workaround for rights. That, you know, they get the fingerprints, they print up the fingers, and they open up your phone just routinely. Right? I could totally mm-hmm. see that happening.
Now, that's kind of scary. Unless there are appropriate checks in place to make sure that a system like this isn't abused.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and there will be, you know, first of all, if a workaround because if law enforcement can work around this,
well, then everyone
foreign
can.
Agents and foreign governments will eventually be able to work around this, as will criminal organizations. So anyone would be able to order up fingerprints. I mean, you know, I guarantee
So at what point do people start saying, you know what, my privacy is more important than my convenience. Therefore, I'm no longer going to use fingerprint as a way to unlock my smartphone.
Well, that's a good question.
At which point the known piece of information to unlock the phone becomes a code stored in your head and presumably nowhere else.
Yeah, or you know, retinal scans or some kind of combination or you know, a spoken thing within, you know, spoken words could be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
There's always this push and shove on this area, right? There's always tension between people who want to break encryption, people who want to break security, and people who want to enhance security, right? There's right. always tension between these two forces. And then you throw into that law enforcement's legitimate need to bypass our security in the pursuit of law enforcement.
Right. It's a hard balancing act because there are situations where it's appropriate for the government to have access to the contents of a computing device. And there are places where maybe it isn't appropriate, but they still want that access. It's hard to find that point where it's no longer appropriate for the government to have access to something.
Yeah, yeah, it's super hard, and you know, and the law enforcement itself muddies the water by starting to take the attitude that they're entitled to have access to all things at all times.
Yeah, that's actually a really dangerous place to be, because that's actually not true, at least from my perspective. The government does not have the right to just have access to all our information all the time. That's not something that they've had in the past, and I'm okay with that. They shouldn't have access to everything, because at that point we've given up all of our privacy, and by extension, our freedoms go along with that.
Yes.
Well, that's real uplifting.
Couldn't say it any better myself.
So, all right. So,
and on that happy note, is that where we cut it?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of where we're going to cut it. All right. Well, I'll play familiar comforting music. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom, just for us. And that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.